history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are always some stories there that should not go untold. The problem is, they may very well go untold if we don't take the time to ask a few questions and patiently listen to what comes back our way. The idea is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but if we're really paying attention, I think often we'll end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation and the powerful perspective they provide. We've been in kind of a different mode during this coronavirus pandemic. I'm sure I don't have to explain to you that, in general terms, the men and women who share their stories on this program are part of the most vulnerable age group when it comes to COVID-19. In light of that, I've been reluctant to schedule face-to-face meetings with vets out of an abundance of caution. Instead, we've spent most weeks lately examining 75th anniversaries of things that were unfolding in the final year of World War II. Earlier this week, President Donald Trump issued a statement on the 75th anniversary of the end of the Battle of Okinawa, a massive 82-day engagement in which more than 12,000 Allied troops were killed. Today, we're going to hear the memories of two men whose experiences 75 years ago this week are echoed in that presidential statement, which pointed out that of the 1,300 American ships involved, 26 were sunk and 168 more damaged. In total, the battle cost more than 200,000 lives, including the tragic loss of nearly 100,000 Okinawan civilians. You're going to hear an example of that today as well. And I'm going to go ahead and read some of that commemorative statement. The grueling struggle on Okinawa lasted 3 months and consisted of multiple battles both at sea and on the island. American and Allied troops had to navigate treacherous terrains, including cliffs and tunnels. They valiantly rose to the challenge, demonstrating the bravery and resolve that have always defined the men and women of our armed forces. In total, presidents awarded 23 medals of honor to true American patriots for their gallantry and courage during the 82 days of fighting on the island. Today, the president said, "We remember our greatest generation and salute those who answered our nation's call with unyielding valor and intrepid resolve. As our country continues to recover from the unprecedented hardships we have faced over the past months, let us draw from their patriotism and conviction in our efforts to build a stronger, more united country for all Americans." So those were the words from the White House this week. Now for the words of men who lived that reality on and around Okinawa firsthand. The USS Curtis had been bombed by the Japanese at Pearl Harbor at the outset of the war. On June 21, 1945, the seaplane tender was again the victim of a Japanese attack. But this time, it was no surprise. Bill Mills and the rest of the sailors on the Curtis knew kamikaze attacks off of Okinawa had intensified.
Yeah, we were thinking about those all the time. We knew we were going into that area, too, and we went, so that was getting pretty close to Tokyo, or Japan, rather.
Well, and this is where kamikazes were the thickest and the most active was off of Okinawa.
Right.
So you guys know when you're headed that way that this is a possibility.
Yeah.
And again, you're not going to see it coming. You're not going to know what's going on.
No.
Well, tell me about it. June 21st, 1945. What do you remember about that day?
The main thing I remember, I guess, that we were in general quarters most of the time. You know, it might let up for just a short time and finally go up on the deck. Finally, I tuck a blanket down and just sleep on that diamond plate steel rather than try to go back up the ladder and back down again. So, yeah, about 2 or 3 days there around that time where we were in general quarters most of the time.
So the days leading up to June 21st, you knew kamikazes were in the area.
Right.
And you're just pretty much on nonstop.
Right.
So you must have been pretty tired. Must have been worn out.
Yeah, I made a note there one place that I kept a little ledger on it. But I made a note there one time I slept an hour and a half.
Let's see if I can read your writing. June 21, 1945, in port at 1842, that's 6:42 p.m., got hit
I can't read it either. So.
Well, it hit by Japanese dive bomber. NGQ most of night, except for a few minutes at a time. Captain Peck was relieved by Captain Doan.
About two hours and something before.
Yeah, 2 hours and 42 minutes before the ship was hit.
Right. So he was off to a bad start.
So this was the captain of your ship?
Yeah. He had just changed captains just before we got hit.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot more to this story than what I just read, that at 6:42 p.m. you got hit by a Japanese dive bomber. Where were you when that happened?
I was in the engine room already because, like I say, we were at GQ most of the time, so I happened to be down there.
And what did that feel like down there when that plane hit?
It felt like the ship bounced off at the bottom and came back up like a cork or something, the way it felt. I knew we were hit.
Did it throw you off your feet?
Oh, yeah, it shook you up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then the ship started to list, naturally, you know. So as it would list, I'd pump water into, or fuel, whichever, into another tank on the other side, and I'd level it off. And about the time you got it level, all the water would shift, and you'd go back the other way. So it was kind of nip and tuck for a while.
Yeah, and probably a lot of people wouldn't even consider that that's how you deal with that situation. So you're in this boiler room. The ship's listing to one side, and if you don't do this right in moving the water around from tank to tank, your ship could sink.
Yeah, it just keeps listing, you know, if you don't pump water to a tank on the other side. So.
And had you ever practiced that before?
I hadn't had the occasion to do that.
How'd you know what to do?
I'm not sure. Somebody told me or I figured it out, one or the other.
It's a good thing you did.
Yeah.
And is that just you doing that? Did you have some other guys helping you?
I had other guys down there, but I, you know, just one guy on the open valve. Well, I had someone to open the valve, you know, or close it.
And how long do you think you had to keep doing that before the ship straightened out?
Oh, it's been so long. It's been about 75 years, so. But it was quite a while. Then there was a seagoing tug came alongside and tied on, kind of propped us up, you know, and.
But those had to be some scary moments for you.
Well, they were scary.
Did you think you guys were going under?
No, I didn't think so. I mean, I didn't have time to think that we were or weren't.
Yeah.
I was just doing my job, you know, trying to figure out which way to pump that water.
And you had to go back and forth a few times, right? Because
right.
It was listing one
right.
way and then the other?
Right.
Yeah. That sounds tense enough to me.
Till we got the seagoing tug alongside, you know, and kind of stabilized us.
And was that night that the tug came along?
Yeah, within a few hours, the tug was there. It must have been close by. And there was another ship, too. They sent a crew aboard to weld a border plate over the hole where there's about a 5x8 gap in the hole, I think.
Well, this is what the Navy said a couple months later when they finally told everybody what happened to you. They said the seaplane tender USS Curtis's fighting power survived at almost maximum strength the crash of a Japanese suicide plane and its 1,000-pound bomb last June near Okinawa, although 35 men were killed and 21 wounded. The kamikaze's delayed-action bomb rammed through to the center line of the Curtis before exploding immediately over a bomb stowage magazine, which miraculously escaped detonation.
That's the part that... Or somebody is looking out for us.
I guess so. How is that possible?
I don't know. It don't sound possible to me.
So
but it happened.
Where this bomb went off was right next to bombs that you guys were carrying.
Yeah.
But somehow they didn't go off.
Somehow they didn't.
Whew.
Yeah, I think the good Lord was looking out for us.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Is that something you believed at the time? That you thought the good Lord would be looking out for you? Or is that just something you see in retrospect?
Yeah, it's just something I see in retrospect.
Uh-huh. So the bomb hits. Somehow it doesn't set off the bombs on your ship, but it does kill more than 35 men. I think later they said 37?
Yeah, something like that. I've heard two or three different counts, uh-huh. But somewhere around 35.
Were there guys that you knew that were killed that day?
I didn't know them too well because it was out of the engineering department.
Uh-huh. If your ship had gone under, do you think there's any way you would have survived?
It's hard to know.
Given where you were. You're kind of trapped, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of trapped if it comes in above.
So you're in there in the boiler room, pumping it back and forth to keep the ship afloat. At what point did you realize the extent of the damage that had happened up above?
Oh, I didn't know for a while, because I was still in general quarters. So it was later that they announced that we were secure, So.
So then what did you have to do?
Stop shaking, I guess.
Well, I'm sure you had a job with relation to cleaning up the damage.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What'd you have to do?
Wasn't much damage in where I was in the boiler room.
Right.
It hit the sick bay and different area in the bomb storage, but it didn't really do any damage where I was, except shake you up a little bit. So just a little cleanup,
But I can't imagine that was an easy job.
No, it wasn't an easy job.
You probably saw things that you'd never seen before.
Oh, I did, yeah. So anyway, we survived.
Yeah. But you probably saw a lot of guys who didn't survive. Like, you probably saw what was left of them.
Right. Yeah. It's not a pretty sight. I guess that's why I filed these papers away in the closet and I didn't even think about that was another life. Mm.
You really haven't talked about it these last 70 years.
Not too much, no. If somebody asks me, I'll tell them.
Did you tell your kids about it growing up?
Not very much till they were grown.
Well, this gives a little more description of it from this official Navy record. It says the Curtiss was operating in the southern Ryukyu's Islands near Okinawa when the kamikaze struck at dusk of June 21, 1945. The Japanese plane took advantage of the gathering darkness and concealment of neighboring islands to approach within 800 yards before he was sighted by lookouts aboard the Curtiss. The plane struck on the starboard side amidships at an estimated speed of 400 knots. The engine, part of the tail assembly, and the heavy bomb ripped through the skin of the ship, opening two gaping holes and exploding on the third deck. The terrific explosion wiped out the sick bay spaces, together with the warrant officer's mess room, staterooms, officer's galley, library, photo lab, barber shop, and post office. Choking smoke gushed from the damaged area and flames licked through four decks above the point of the explosion. Fire mains and sprinkler systems in the blasted area were ruptured, and the firefighting crew brought emergency extinguishing equipment to bear. At this critical stage, however, the main propulsion engines were operative, and the Curtiss could have proceeded at moderate speed. Also, gun crews standing at general quarters stations against further air attack and all guns operative except the forward 5-inch battery. With the fires out of control, there was imminent danger of the flames reaching the bomb stowage magazine, the upper ammunition handling rooms, and adjacent magazines. During this critical period, many acts of individual heroism were observed. When it became apparent that a great volume of water was needed to control fires in the Curtiss, two salvage vessels and two ocean tugs came alongside to assist. These small ships, under grave danger from threatened explosion of the Curtiss's magazine, remained alongside for more than an hour, pumping heavy streams of water onto the burning compartments. The Shackle sent a combat fire team aboard the Curtiss to cut their way with torches into a compartment in which a dangerous fire was burning. With flames under control, the ship's force turned to, with little rest, to clear away the debris and pump out flooded magazines and compartments. Then a service force repair crew came aboard to weld a boilerplate on the 5-by-8-foot gash in the hull. The ship was prepared to proceed. In reporting the action, the commanding officer credited the cool efficiency of the entire ship's company in the face of great danger with saving the ship and reducing casualties to a minimum. Sounds like a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal to me.
These other ships, by coming to your aid, were risking themselves. All those guys were risking their own lives.
Right, because we could have had an explosion in there any time, and they were gone too. So.
Yeah, not only was it miraculous that the Japanese bomb didn't set off your bombs, but these fires are still burning. They could set off all kinds of stuff.
Right, that's what I mean.
And where that Japanese plane, where the damage stopped, was four decks down. Are you right below that?
Yeah, I guess I was just below it. I was at the bottom point, really. Just the bilge is all what left underneath me. So
if it had come down a little further, it blows you and everything up.
Yeah, it would.
And this fire's going for a while. Did you see any of that fire or the smoke?
No, I didn't. Like I say, I was in my battle station in the boiler room. I am glad I didn't see it.
And your commanding officer credits the whole ship with saving the ship. That means you. What you were doing down there in the boiler room helped save the ship.
Yeah, I suppose.
How often have you thought about that over all these years?
Not too much. I mean, I figured, well, I made it, so why worry about it now? Some people weren't so lucky, so there's a lot of people died. One thing I regret, my ship went into Tokyo Harbor. I rated Liberty, and I could have gone ashore, but I didn't want to. I regret it now. I didn't want to see them. I didn't want to face them or something.
So in retrospect, you wish you would have gone off
right,
and looked around a little bit?
Because I've never been to Japan.
Why was it you were so upset with Japan? Was it just that they had started this in the first place, or that they had hit your ship?
Or? I think so. And all the buddies that had died, you know, and all that stuff. So I didn't have a good feeling for them. I was finished.
And for decades, Mr. Mills really didn't discuss his experiences in World War II. In his case, as it has been with many veterans in recent years, an honor flight to Washington, D.C. brought some of those memories to the surface. And sharing that honor flight experience with so many other veterans gave him the courage to talk about it.
Well, I thought it was great, but I just feel like I was being treated as a hero, and I wasn't a hero, you know. I just did my job.
Well, if you hadn't done your job as well as you did it, there might have been more guys who didn't come home.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it.
Including you.
including me.
What were the things about that trip, the things that happened on that trip, that made you feel that way, that they were seeing you in that light?
Everything, I guess. I mean, there was someone waiting on you, taking care of you. You didn't have to. And then a lot of these places I would have never seen, you know. So I really appreciate it.
You had a few people that wanted to shake your hand?
My hand hasn't rested up yet.
What do they say to you?
Most of them say thanks, you know, and stuff like that. When I came back into Fresno, there's some of those ladies were even crying, you know, as they had tears in their eyes as they'd shake your hand. So I thought that was something.
I bet they did more than shake your hand. I bet you got a few kisses on the cheeks.
I did. That was a highlight.
And I bet you had a whole lot of your family waiting for you.
Yep, that's for sure. That was great.
And the band playing and people waving red, white, and blue and right. Cheering for you.
Yeah, and the way the traffic gave you the right-of-way on the buses and stuff like that, that was amazing.
You know, I've had a lot of veterans tell me that. One of the things they were most impressed by was having a police escort around Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that impressed me, for sure.
Make you feel like you're somebody.
Right. Maybe I am a hero.
I think there's a lot of people that would say that. And I asked you earlier about getting mail from home. Did you get some mail on that flight? Did they hand you some letters on the way home?
Oh, yeah, that was something. Wasn't those kids? That brought tears to my eyes, you know, that they'd go to all that trouble.
People you've never met before are writing you letters and saying
right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And what about being there in Washington? I know you saw a lot of things. You saw the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and you saw all the names on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, the haunting Korean War Memorial, and those soldiers marching through the rice paddy. But what about being at the World War II Memorial and taking all that in? Here you've got a pillar for Oklahoma, your native state, and one for California, the state that you've lived in for all these years. And then there's that wall of gold stars. 406,000 Americans were killed in World War II. What did you think about while you were looking at that?
I was just thinking it was a big waste, and hope we don't have to do it again.
Did the thought enter your mind how close you came to being part of one of those stars?
No, not really. I guess I figured I made it, so why worry about it now or something?
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just curious, too, if while looking at that big wall of gold stars, and it says underneath, here we mark the price of freedom. Did your mind go to any of the people you knew who died in World War II?
Just the crew, mostly, my ship.
Yeah, 36 guys who were killed with that kamikaze.
Yeah, and the Pearl Harbor, too. I mean, the Pearl Harbor, that bothers me, the Pearl Harbor.
Because it was a surprise attack?
Yeah.
You remember feeling that before you went in the service?
Yeah, I was ready to go back and pay for it.
I know it was a long way away at the opposite end of the war, but the way the Curtis was hit on December 7th was very similar to the way it was hit on June 21st, 1945. A Japanese plane with a bomb crashing into the ship.
That's right.
And who knows how close you were to being entombed in the boiler room of the Curtis.
Oh, yeah. Or he could have hit by the boiler room, so.
You would have never known what hit you.
I'd never known.
Well, I don't want to belabor that point, but I do want to join all those people who shook your hand on the honor flight and said, thank you for serving our country. Thank you also for telling us a little bit about it. Is there something that you'd say, you know, most of us alive today weren't alive during World War II. We didn't hear about Pearl Harbor on the radio. We didn't go through rationing. We certainly didn't go overseas and get shot at or get kamikazed off of Okinawa. What do you think is important for us to understand today about what happened then and what all you guys went through and why you did what you did?
Just hope it don't happen again, I guess.
Do you think America was different then than it is now?
Well, I think so. I don't think America would do that now. I don't think they'd come together like they did in World War II. People are too divided in opinions.
You said something a little while ago. Who do you see as the heroes of World War II?
Actually, I see the heroes as the guys that are out there in front with the Marines and the attacks. That's the heroes. That's where you're going in face-to-face with these guys. To me, they're heroes.
Well, we are going to hear the memories of one of those men he was describing when we come back. That was Bill Mills. And about the same time his ship, the USS Curtis, was dealing with that devastating kamikaze attack off of Okinawa, thousands of Allied troops were in the final days of fighting on Okinawa. One teenage Marine brought home something that always reminded him of the reality of war. Hear about that special keepsake when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.